The Seventh Fanfic by Mark Clapham. On the planet Della, within the Tashwari regime, sat a string of islands. Those rain-battered islands were home to St. Oscar's University, and on the northernmost island sat the barrel-shaped red brick building of Garland College Hall of Residence. The rector of the hall, Professor Bernie Summerfield, was holder of the Edward Watkinson Chair of Archaeology, currently in residence in the rector's rooms, and not a specialist in bicycle maintenance. The last point was causing Bernice some grief as she kneeled down holding a multi-tool with various wrench-like arms, trying to work out how to apply it to the twisted front wheel of her bicycle. She had twisted the wheel, hitting a bump earlier that day, cutting across rough ground by the Advanced Research Department. Bernice had also bruised her elbow, her arse, and her dignity in the process, but she was fairly sure at least two of those would heal of their own accord. Bernice wasn't sure she could repair the bike on her own, but the heavily unionised maintenance staff of the university would exact a high price to do the job. The fact that she had several other pressing financial demands on her, including subscriptions to academic journals, bar tabs, and the attendance fee for an upcoming conference on Mars, made her ever more determined to fix the bike herself. Gritting her teeth, Bernice engaged the multi-tool with a recalcitrant wheel and applied force, causing three spokes to snap. Bernice swore. As if in response, she heard the flap of the porter hatch click. Presumably her porter, a small floating spherical robot called Joseph, had become so used to her foul language being cast in his direction that he regarded any swearing as a summons. Bernice closed her eyes and bit her lip, feeling that combination of rage, distress, and guilt that comes from allowing a bad situation to push you into bad behaviour. She let out a sigh, then spoke. "Sorry, Joseph," she said. "That wasn't aimed at you."
"I regret Joseph isn't available, Professor Summerfield," said a high-pitched synthetic voice with an accent Bernice couldn't quite place. "His battery depleted, and he is confined to his charging station until further notice."
Bernice opened her eyes to see a porter similar to Joseph, silver-edged, with a bright purple luminescent ring in the centre, floating in front of her.
"That's impossible," she told the porter. "Those batteries have a charge time of 3 minutes and a lifespan of 400 years.
The porter jiggled from side to side, and Bernice realised it was imitating a shrug.
"Joseph believes he needs to recharge," said the porter. "This allows us the time to speak."
Bernice turned the multi-tool in her hand, holding it by one of the arms. She was fairly sure she could crack the shell of the porter with one well-aimed blow if it became hostile.
"And why do you need to speak to me?" she asked. "Are you a fan?" "I represent the Department of Narrative Affairs on Earth," said the porter. "In urgent circumstances, where deployment of a live agent is impossible, the department uses an ultra-dimensional data abstraction module to take control of a vessel such as this porter."
"So you're Adam from the DNA," said Bernice. "Cute acronyms."
"Thank you," said Adam, without a hint of gratitude. "This vessel is authorised to recruit a local specialist to engage in fieldwork for the department. The DNA, as you put it. We would like to recruit you."
Bernice blinked while she processed this. "A secret agency I've never heard of is too far away to get here, so it's hacked a robot butler to get me to spy for it," she said. Adam let out an unimpressed hum.
"That is more or less correct," it said, "if linguistically imprecise."
"The linguistics department is one island over," said Bernice, "and I'm not for hire. Bugger off."
"With respect, Professor Summerfield," said the porter, "you are exactly who we are looking for, and your finances indicate you should be amenable to at least hearing our pitch. As an act of good faith, we have just paid off your overdraft."
Over on the desk, Bernice's data slate pinged. She shuffled over to the desk on her knees, picked up the slate and glanced at it. A notification on screen indicated her account was now 1 shilling in the black.
"Great. You can now grass me up for taking bribes if this all goes south, she said. Well, Adam, as you have such deep pockets, it would be churlish of me not to at least listen to your message. I'm nothing if not fair-minded. Thank you, said Adam, giving a little cough before launching into a smooth sales pitch.
Ahem. The Department of Narrative Affairs deals with threatening texts, literature and folklore within Earth's sphere of influence. We have reason to believe that just such a narrative, the prime metatext, will be presented at a small symposium on your campus. Your recent experience of pantomime means that you are uniquely suited to understand how a story can alter reality and bend minds to its will. We would like you to attend the symposium as an interested academic and report back to this unit on anything unusual.
Adam left a significant beat before speaking again.
You will be very well compensated for this work.
If this is so easy, why not do it yourself? Bernice asked. You could hide behind a coffee cup and record the whole thing. Adam bobbed in the air.
As ingenious and lucid as this unit is, Professor, it does not possess a living mind, said Adam. We need someone capable of feeling the influence of this metatext on their mind, the power of the story being told.
You're asking me to get myself brainwashed, said Bernice. Wonderful.
You decline our offer, said Adam.
No, I accept, said Bernice, tossing her multi-tool down. Here at St. Oscar's, no one gets to warp young minds who isn't on the academic staff. The first Delahun Symposium on Contemporary Metatextual Studies was taking place in a hexagonal outbuilding of Pierce College, so utterly tucked away that Bernice had never even seen it before. It was little more than a single lecture hall, overlooking the very edge of the island, wide windows across three walls looking out to sea. A low stage had been erected in front of those windows, with a drinks area, doors, and the usual amenities at the back. When Bernice arrived, delegates and student volunteers were circling with caffeinated beverages. For an obscure event, it was busy with attendees from various species, but she recognised the young man who cut through the crowd as a recent addition to St. Oscar's staff, Wardrew Thorne. Thorne had thick purple hair swept back in an oiled quiff, a tweed waistcoat pulled over a tight white shirt, and seemed to Bernice to be in his mid-teens.
"Professor Summerfield!" he exclaimed. "I was so glad you decided to attend. I know our little field is outside your subject area, but as a specialist in 20th-century human culture, your cross-disciplinary input is very welcome."
"Well, I'm always in favour of that," said Bernice, realising she had wasted her time rehearsing an elaborate cover story.
"Good, good," said Thorne. "Please help yourself to refreshments. We'll be starting soon."
"Thank you," she told his disappearing back as he bounded off. One student volunteer passed Bernice a cup of caffeine, another gave her an uncomfortable plastic chair, and she clumsily shuffled herself into a good viewing spot. Having positioned her chair, Bernice stepped backwards and froze as she felt a bristling across her back, like a rough brush through her shirt. The sensation was like a premonition of something terrible, but entirely real.
Sorry,
squeaked a voice behind her, and the bristling went away. Bernice looked around to see a hedgehog-like creature looking at her through pince-nez glasses. The creature wore a summery dress and a bonnet, both pierced by countless spines. She carried a manila folder in one small black hand, and her nose twitched as she looked at Bernice with her very shiny eyes.
Beetle Chef Fogwax, said the hedgehog, extending her free hand. The University of Fallow Thatch, Yantov.
Bernice Summerfield, said Bernice, shaking the offered hand, which had the rough palm of someone who spent at least some of her time walking on all fours. St. Oscar's University. Here, I guess. Yantov, isn't that in the same system as Packard?
Yes,
said Fogwax, her tiny face screwing up even smaller. Bernice realised she had tripped over some vast political animosity. "Are you speaking?" she asked,
rapidly changing the subject.
Oh, yes,
said Fogwax, her expression changing completely, tiny eyes wide with wonder.
Human culture is so fascinatingly exotic. I myself specialise in the Regency and Gothic romance forms. Such a short period in Earth history, yet it has produced narratives which have spread across the galaxy. See?
Fogwax reached into her folder and pulled out a piece of paper. It was a scan of a book cover, the title of the book being The Earl's Egg Clatch. The cover art depicted a Chelonian in tight breeches, sweeping a Chelonian in a pinafore dress and bonnet off her feet. Fascinating, said Bernice. She wasn't sure what else to say, but thankfully Wardrew Thorne was taking the stage and coughing the room to order, so Bernice had an excuse to sit down quietly instead. The first day of the symposium passed in a pleasantly caffeinated blur, but Bernice didn't find it particularly informative. After a short and enthusiastic introduction from Thorne about the persuasive power of narrative, the rest of the day was taken up with a combination of short lectures and readings. The lectures were on linguistics, semiotics, and story structure, while the readings were of the most generic stories imaginable. Told with a verve that was probably intended to be powerful, moving oration, they came across closer to a bad poetry slam, and Bernice had been to enough of those to know which nights to avoid the student union. The first day ended with what Thorne described as a drinks reception, but which Bernice thought of as some boxes of cheap wine and plastic cups. In an effort to keep her wits about her, she didn't drink much of the wine. No hard task, as it was disgusting. Instead, she made small talk with the students and visiting academics and discovered, much to her chagrin, that by the relative lifespans of their species, most of the attendees were considerably younger than her. Bernice walked back to Garland College at the end of the day with the uncomfortable suspicion that her failure to grapple with what she had seen wasn't just due to not being her subject area, but because she was too old. No, she told the ceiling in her rooms later, leaning back on the sofa, it is the children who are wrong.
You enjoyed the presentation on vintage JPEG memes? Asked Adam, who had floated uninvited through the porter hatch.
Enjoyed is probably too strong a word, said Bernice, but I understood that one. Of course, I was the only one there who had seen the episode.
And how did it make you feel?
Bernice frowned.
Are you analysing me, Adam? Simply ascertaining whether anything you saw today solicited an extreme response.
Bernice sat up straight on the sofa.
Should I?
The porter bobbed evasively from side to side.
The prime metatext will have a powerful influence.
The most powerful things I absorbed today were instant caffeine and cheap wine.
Very well, said Adam. But stay alert.
Always, Adam, said Bernice, forcing herself to stand up and walk to the bedroom. Concentrating all day had left her unexpectedly exhausted.
Now let yourself out.
She heard the porter hatch click before she closed her bedroom door. The next morning, Bernice got to the symposium just in time to catch Thorne introducing a delegate Bernice had spoken to at the reception, Sodarka Kadjo. Kadjo took to the stage slowly, trailing liquid from her long white robes, liquid that evaporated almost instantly into fine mist. Her form was shrouded in a light fuzz of static that distorted the air around her. A descendant of colonists who had genetically engineered themselves for a cold, dark moon, Kadjo's pulse was slow and her body temperature low. She used one bony white hand to push her dank black hair behind one ear, and a rolling, wide eye was revealed, the retina dropping to give the audience a piercing gaze. Several attendees instinctively shrank back before muttering apologies. Kadjo gave a brief bow, opened a pink, butterfly-decorated folder on the lectern, and started to read. At the next caffeine break, Bernice went straight to the washroom to splash cold water on her face. She thought it would make her feel better, but instead, as she looked at her own dripping features in the mirror, She had a persistent image in her mind of cold, dark water rising, creeping up her ankles. Bernice blasted her face with the hand dryer and went outside for some fresh air instead. Flicking through her handwritten notes on Cadjo's talk while pacing outside the lecture hall, Bernice was hard pushed to see what had left her in such a disturbed state. The details seemed entirely generic. Old house, basement, missing girl, rising water, darkness. Bernice couldn't quite place what had happened in the story behind these few details. Although Cadjo's reading had gone on for quite a while, the plot looping and feeding on itself in a way that Bernice had found unnerving. There was something hypnotic in Cadjo's gentle delivery of the story that made the audience lean in to listen to her. But it was more than good oration at work. The story had wormed its way into the brain of the attendees, or at least it had with Bernice. She flipped the notepad shut and shuddered. She'd seen a few rackety old houses in her travels. Perhaps Cadjo's story had scraped up some old memories in a surprising way. It didn't seem that it was the prime metatext Adam was looking for. Apart from anything else, it didn't seem useful for motivating a crowd, just freaking them out. Bernice went back in to get another horrible cup of caffeine before the next presentation. The crowd of young academics were gathered around Sodaka Cadjo when Bernice re-entered the hall, congratulating her on an excellent presentation while maintaining a discreet distance.
"Well, they seem to like it,"
said Fogwax, shuffling up to Bernice. Her small hands were wrestling with some knitting, the needles clicking nervously.
"Oh, what it is to be young and to have fun with your fears."
"Oh, we're not so much older," replied Bernice, with attempted conviction.
"I am 82 years old," said Fogwax, "practically middle-aged."
Bernice was trying to think of some way of expressing that she was not only much younger than that, but didn't consider herself remotely middle-aged, thank you, when Fogwax waved a dismissive knitting needle.
I know that's quite old by human standards," said Fogwax, "but the extra years only count for so much when you spend a third of your life hibernating."
"May I ask what you're knitting?" asked Bernice, now desperate to change the subject.
"A scarf," said Fogwax. "I only knit scarves. They're nice and simple. It doesn't really matter what I knit, but I find the activity relaxing, especially after such a disturbing story."
Fogwax gave a theatrical shudder, her prickles standing on end. Bernice thought she was quite the most nervous little person she had ever met. "Are you going to be okay to do your presentation?" Bernice asked. Fogwax was due on stage after lunch.
"Oh, yes,"
said Fogwax, eyes twinkling. Her knitting needles relaxed, and it was as if the fear had seeped out of her entire body.
"Oh, yes, I'm quite looking forward to it."
After a dull presentation about replicating the poetic rhythms of human speech and storytelling, and an even duller vegetarian buffet, it was time for Fogwax's presentation. Fogwax took the stage, papers in one hand, spectacles on her twitching nose. She readjusted the mic to her level and cleared her throat. When she spoke, Fogwax's voice was completely different to her normal conversational squeak. Instead, she began to speak with the rich, deep tones of an advert for expensive caffeine. Her velvety words were deliberate and seductive as she spoke of a young woman of respectable birth who, by no fault of her own, was reduced to poor financial circumstances and took a position as a governess in a sprawling mansion. A long series of misunderstandings, uncovered family secrets, and storms both literal and metaphoric later, Fogwax's protagonist finally married the lord of the manor, the stormy skies clearing for a sun-kissed happy ever after. There was a short break between Fogwax's presentation and the seminar to discuss it, and Bernice took the opportunity to sneak out. She gave Fogwax an enthusiastic double thumbs up across the room as she left. It was lightly raining outside, And Bernice closed her eyes and lifted her face to the sky as she walked away from the lecture hall. The cool water felt good, and she hoped it would dampen the hormones she felt pumping through her body, calm her elevated heart rate. Bernice had needed to get out of the room after what she had listened to. As a member of the academic staff, she absolutely should not be in the presence of young, handsome students and junior staff in her current mood. It was a disciplinary hearing waiting to happen. She had intended to go home for a cold shower, but thankfully Della's turbulent ecosystem had provided it for her. "Leaving early, Professor Summerfield?" said Wardrew Thorne, just as the wind started to pick up. She turned to see him illuminated by lightning, his tweed waistcoat flapping in the wind, the rain dampening down his quiff into a Byronic tangle that he brusquely pushed back from his face. Behind his glasses, his expression was unreadable, mysterious. "I have a prior engagement," Bernice said in more of a strangled squeak than she intended. The paperwork in academia never stops, alas." Thorne smiled, a smile that could be interpreted as cruel or kind, and Bernice wished that she could pull her interpretation of everything back out of romantic cliché. "Well, have a good evening, Professor," said Thorne, turning back towards the lecture hall with a purposeful stride. "We hope to see you tomorrow." "Oh, definitely," said Bernice, rolling her eyes at her own girlish tone. Then she turned away herself, biting her bottom lip at the awkwardness of it all. She didn't actually have any paperwork to do, but the lie had put an idea in her head. Instead of walking back to Garland College, Bernice squelched her way towards St. Oscar's central admin building. An hour later, Bernice re-emerged from the admin building, the murderously aggressive central heating in the filing stacks had dried her clothes and hair, leaving her feeling steam-pressed. The rain had stopped, the evening air crisp and pleasant. Adam bobbed out of the bushes to hover alongside Bernice as she walked home.
"We are not paying you," said the porter, "to leave the symposium early."
"If you are following me so closely," replied Bernice, skimming the sole of her shoe across a puddle in a flick of spray, "then you will already know I was continuing my investigation by other means."
"The admin buildings are porter-proofed," said Adam. "Apparently, university staff have a tendency to task their porters with altering expense accounts and exam results."
"Some people have no ethics," said Bernice, mentally crossing out the idea of getting Joseph to do future dirty work for her.
"So, what did you discover?"
asked Adam. "Nothing definitive," said Bernice, who had picked up a bad habit of being needlessly mysterious. "But I have a hunch. We'll see how it plays out tomorrow." Adam made an unsatisfied digital harumph. There is a certain lack of focus on the last day of any academic event, as thoughts are partially drawn towards checkout times and lengthy journeys home. The last day of the symposium was structured with this in mind, the morning devoted to a generalised discussion, followed by a long lunch. Wardrew Thorne was due to sum up the entire event in a short closing speech after lunch, before the delegates dashed off to the spaceport. The discussion in the morning was relaxed, with occasional agitated outbursts over contentious points. The great schism in this area of academia seemed to be over the role of performance in delivering narrative. Fogwax was a vocal proponent of performance as a significant part of influence, to the extent that certain vocal tics could overcome weaknesses in the structure of a narrative. On the other side of the debate, Sodaka Kajo flatly insisted that sound narrative structure was everything, and, beyond basic matters of coherence, performance was irrelevant. Thorne diplomatically balanced both sides, while the more junior delegates chipped in to the debate with minor points. Bernice stayed quiet. To her, it was obvious that both Kajo and Fogwax were partially correct, and that the ultimate meta-narrative would hit all the required plot beats and be compellingly performed. Bernice made her apologies at the start of lunch, saying she needed to meet a student over the break and promising to come back. It was a sunny day, and when she snuck into the back of the lecture hall an hour later, she was wearing dark glasses. Bernice bashed her knee on the back of a chair as she sat down, rattling the two rows in front of her. She gave the disapproving heads that snapped around to stare at her an apologetic grimace.
Thank you all for being here today and for travelling from near or far to attend this very first symposium on contemporary metatextual studies here at St. Oscar's, said Thorne, striding back and forth on the stage. I am so proud that for a first event we have drawn so many distinguished speakers and had so many great discussions. We have done wonderful things and can do so much more together. I would like to close this first symposium with a few personal words about what narrative means to me.
Thorne took off his glasses, folded them up, and slid them into his waistcoat pocket. His body language was loosening up, becoming more expressive.
I was orphaned at an early age and sent to stay with relatives on a small desert planet at the edge of Earth space.
The story of Wardrew Thorne started simply enough, with this early tragedy and his humble upbringing. Bernice could feel the crowd resistant, with watch-checking and fidgeting of wheelie suitcases by academics keen to wrap this up and get on their way. As Thorne grew to adolescence, a lonely youth in this desolate place, empathy encouraged the crowd to settle down, the attendees being pulled into his narrative, although Bernice was finding it harder to follow. When Thorne met an old man in the desert who knew about his past and revealed that it was in one of humanity's wars against alien species that Thorne's parents had been killed, the sympathy of the non-human delegates was fully engaged. Bernice took off her dark glasses, squeezed the bridge of her nose, and tried to stay focused. Thorne was in full flow now, waistcoat unbuttoned, as he, a young man, lost his surrogate parents thanks to the dreaded Earth Central and went on a quest to avenge them. He had a great destiny and was the only one who could wield the powers that he had inherited to strike back against the evil empire. As Thorne talked about his spiritual quest, Bernice found herself relating to him in spite of all the precautions she had made. She too had run away from military academy. She shook her head, making herself feel a little nauseous. The story began to twist and turn as Thorne learned his narrative arts with the greatest storytellers in the universe. Every time the story cycled back to the activities of the nefarious human empire, the gathered academics became more agitated. Bernice's vision wasn't entirely non-blurry, but she could swear Thorne's eyes were beginning to glow. Perhaps he had implants with some hypnotic effect? When Thorne's story caught up with the present day, with the symposium itself, it didn't stop. He wove those present into the narrative. The people of Kajo's world, traumatized by adaptation to their environment and neglected by Earth. Fogwax's people who received no human aid for their struggle with the Packars. They were all part of Thorne's story now, his great destiny. Bernice rose to her feet as the story moved beyond the present and the delegates went out to plan counterstrikes against the Earth authorities. The mood of the crowd was like a physical thing, and Bernice had to push through it, stumbling towards the stage with uneasy footsteps.
And you, Bernice Summerfield, Thorne called out as she approached the stage. You, who have always protected the innocent and fought injustice, you struck the greatest blow of all against...
Thorne was cut off in mid-sentence as Bernice punched him on the jaw. He reeled backwards, and something in the atmosphere of the room snapped. Bernice staggered and turned to the crowd.
Don't listen to him, she bellowed. I'm an academic, and so are all of you. We're here to learn, not blow things up.
And then she was very, very sick. If her words weren't enough to snap the crowd out of their trance, visceral disgust did the rest. An hour or so later, Bernice was still too drunk to keep track of time properly. She sat on the grassy cliff at the edge of the island. She reckoned that either the salty sea air would help her sober up, or she would drunkenly roll off the edge and fall to her death on the rocks below. In her current half-inebriated, nauseous state, she wasn't sure which would be the quicker mercy.
Ah, there you are,
said Fogwax, edging across to her on all fours. When she reached Bernice, she rolled smoothly into a sitting position.
Campus authorities have taken Thorn away. I don't think he'll be lecturing here again.
He never lectured here in the first place, said Bernice weakly. I checked the records yesterday. Thorn used his narrative skills to set up this whole event, his study group, even the idea that he worked here. None of the paperwork stretched back earlier than a few months ago. He had drawn the University Senate into his narrative and convinced them that they had already agreed.
Well, thanks to your investigative skills, we were all safe from becoming intergalactic terrorists,
said Fogwax. Investigative skills and a strong liver, said Bernice. Although even my prodigious drinking skills found keeping down most of a bottle of cider at lunchtime a challenge, I couldn't risk being sober enough to be drawn into Thorn's trap. Bernice closed her eyes. She felt a small hand squeeze her shoulder.
We will all remember your sacrifice, said Fogwax.
And Bernice was too drained and delirious to worry about whether Fogwax was taking the piss. She heard the little hedgehog creature shuffle away and lowered herself onto her back with a groan. At some point, Bernice must have fallen asleep on the warm grass, as the next thing she remembered was being woken by a repetitive buzz and electric tickle on her bare arm. She opened her eyes and rapidly closed them against the glare of the late afternoon sun. She batted Adam away as he tried to zap her arm again. She tried to swear, but her mouth was horribly dry. Bernice rolled onto her side and opened one eye. Adam hovered down, a small claw hanging from the porter's body holding the neck of a bottle of water. She grabbed it from him, twisted off the cap, and drank greedily. Oh, thank you, she said eventually.
No, thank you, Professor Summerfield, said Adam. Wardrobe Thorn is under arrest and will eventually be transferred to DNA custody. The Prime metatext has been discreetly leaked onto the intergalactic web, making its narrative tricks commonplace and therefore useless. The agreed amount is in your account, and as a bonus, I have paid off your tab at the Union Bar.
Thanks, said Bernice, but I'm never drinking again.
Of course,
said Adam, who knew this was untrue as much as Bernice did.
You have done a good thing today, as we knew you would.
Oh, said Bernice half-heartedly. How are you so sure?
Because we know your story, said Adam. We follow all the great stories, Bernice Summerfield, and yours is one of them. We have followed it for some time and hope to follow it for many years to come.
Well, I'm glad someone is entertained by all this, said Bernice.
Just keep being yourself, Benny, said Adam, floating away. Just keep being Bernice Summerfield, and everything will be fine.
And then he was gone, leaving Bernice in the sun with her water bottle. After a few more sips, she began to feel a bit better. No longer hideously drunk, but not quite sober enough for the hangover to kick in. The trick, she thought, was to have a couple more drinks before bedtime, staying mildly frazzled for the rest of the day, then sleep the whole lot off in one go. Unsteadily, Bernice pulled herself to her feet and started to walk in the direction of the Union Bar.